And now, you're tuned into Tampa Bay's RBLR Sports.
What's up, RBLR Bucks? Hope y'all are having a great day, great night, great week. Whenever y'all are tuning in, whether live or on demand, I am Carter Brantley, one of the co-hosts of RBLR Bucks. You are tuned in, and we are going to be talking about some draft grades today. Last week, we kind of beat around the bush. We talked about it more in a theoretical sense. And this week, we're kind of getting into the nitty-gritty of it. We're going to be breaking down each pick, talking about the needs, the fit, how the talent for the draft position, and if it was a reach or a steal, the risk-reward factor, all of that. And we're going to be getting into all of it for each different pick. But before we get into any of it, I have to introduce my wonderful co-host, Mr. Zach Blaine. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm doing pretty good, brother. I mean, I missed the Musab Tariq entertaining intro, but yours was just good, brother, man. I'm glad that we get to sit here and talk together.
Yeah, no, me too. I appreciate what do they call it? The harmless sly or whatever about
no,
the
Musab. No, that wasn't a dig, brother.
Because Musab Tariq intros are always going to be goaded. You know, we can't match that. No one ever can. Myself, you, anyone else. I appreciate it. But yeah, we're excited to talk about some draft stuff because it was an eventful one. You know, the Bucks had some steals. They had some picks that maybe we don't necessarily love or we don't necessarily agree with. But before we get into all that as well, hit that like and subscribe button if you want to keep up to date with the Bucks, because we're going to be talking about this next week. We're going to be talking about the rest of the division because the NFC South also had some really interesting selections. So we're going to get into all of that and hit that like and subscribe button to keep up to date. Also leave some comments because I know that we're going to be spitting some stuff that people aren't going to be agreeing with. Whether it's about the first round pick, although I think it's going to be pretty unanimous there, but the rest of the draft, people might disagree with our takes. So drop those takes in the comment section. We'd really appreciate it. All right, let's get into it because enough chattering about it. Let's just talk about it. We're going to start with Reuben Bain. I think this is going to be the easiest one. For me, I'm trying to break each pick down by need or fit. And then talent for draft position, which is basically like whether it was a reach or a steal, and then the risk reward factor for each pick. So basically like the guy's upside versus his floor, and then an overall grade. So for the need, the fit, I mean, this is a perfect one, A+. You couldn't have done any better. The Bucks have been in need for a better pass rush for forever. And his talent for the draft position, in other words, he was a steal. Like nobody expected Reuben Bain to be there at 15. So the Bucks got a huge steal out of this. And so I gave that an A+ as well. The risk reward, there is a very real possibility that his short arms come into play here. I know the arm length thing might be a little bit overblown, but there is a risk there. But the reward is super high. So I still gave it a B+. But overall, it's an A+. Like, this is a home run pick. Like, this was the perfect selection. There's no one I would have picked, rather Jason Light picked here at 15 that was available. Reuben Bain, man, what more can you say, Mr. Blaine? Do you have any disagreements for any of these grades, or are we kind of on board?
I mean, I did mine a bit different. I didn't go, you know, section for section. I just went what I thought the overall pick was in general. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I took all those things into consideration, but overall, right. Even – I don't necessarily disagree with you with the risk reward part, but I still gave this pick an A. I think the risk reward does bump it down from an A+, but I think it's like, if we're calling an A+ a 100, this is like a 99.5. Like, it's right there. I think when I was looking at all the draft picks, especially first round guys, I had him in my top 3 to top 5 players.
Yeah.
So to get him at 15, it felt like a steal. Honestly, I would have traded up for Reuben Bain. So yeah. In the mock drafts that I was doing, I had us trading up to 10 to 12 if he was still available on the board at that point. So for me to get him at 15, I mean, this is the steal of the draft in my opinion, and I love the pick. It's an A+ for me. Well, A, 99.5 for me.
Man, so what would be a 100? What would be an A+ for you? Was there an A+?
They took Jacob Rodriguez in round 2. Okay. No. Had we got Sonny Styles, that would have been an A+ for me.
Okay. Fair enough. I dig it. There's always got to be reaching for something, because in 99.5%, that's still pretty darn good. An A is still very, very fair. Honestly,
you could give it an A plus, and I would not be the least bit upset with you, because the value at which we got him and not having to trade up to get him, I think, adds to it as well. So it's a great pick all around, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, we go from probably the most popular pick of all of the NFL draft, maybe, you know, across the board, even regardless of team, to a pick that Bucs fans, myself included, not super jazzed about. That's Josiah Trotter, linebacker out of Missouri. He was our second round pick. And Mr. Blaine, I'll let you have the floor first, because I want to get the really harsh words, because I don't love it either. So I'm not gonna try to, you know, convince you that a third is gold, but I know you're going to be very harsh on it, so I'll let you go first.
You know, I'm not going to be as harsh as I thought I would. I'm not a fan of the pick. I think we could have gotten him later, if I'm being completely honest with you. I don't think where we got him at, I think with Anthony Hill being on the board still and fitting more of what this team has struggled with, I don't think Josiah Trotter is a bad player. And I feel like I got to lead with that, because it's going to sound like I'm hating on him. He is a more improved version of Servacier Dennis. No, I don't even want to say that. He's a great pass rusher. Very good at pass rushing. But you've now set us up to fit Todd Bowles' system. He is a second-round guy. He's got a four-year contract. You've now picked the perfect player for Todd Bowles' system when Todd Bowles is on the hot seat. When there's a more well-rounded linebacker available at that point. I'm thankful we didn't take C.J. Allen, but I think we may have taken a guy that shocked me more than if we would have taken C.J. Allen. Like, Tampa was like, here, we have C.J. Allen here, but I'm going to surprise y'all and take someone else that may have been a worse pick, in my opinion, because he is a really good pass rusher, but he's got, from what I've seen, no – coverage ability whatsoever. And I know that we had sent a thing to the chat. I think it was you that had sent a thing to the chat that, like, the last half of his games were much better than the first half of his games.
Right. Like, he showed improvement.
Yeah. But what scares me is the first half were the weaker opponents. So I'm not sure how I feel about it. Like, yeah, he did better against some stronger SEC opponents, but he played really bad against James Madison. I don't know if that was actually a school on there, but that's just hypothetically. It was some no-name schools that his PFF grade was not great in coverage. So if he comes out and can show us that he can play coverage and as well as rush a quarterback, awesome. I will love this pick. But right now I'm giving it a C-. Like, I just – I want to go lower, but the pass rush ability is there. Like, I've got to be honest with myself and say he is very good at the pass rush. And his run defense isn't bad either. So it's like it fits well with what Todd Bowles does. If Todd Bowles is here for another 4 years, this could be a great pick. If Todd Bowles is fired after this season, then Trotter will be on a new team in 3 years. So it's like, I give it a C- all the way around, C- B plus in that range.
Yeah. Yeah. I gave it a C overall. The good news is what saves this for me is that I know this sounds kind of reductive, but at least they're trying to address the linebacker.
You're spot on. We clearly have a need at inside linebacker.
Right. So that was sort of what I was leaning on that lifted it a little bit. Cause I was tempted to go C minus here, but I thought a C was a fair middle ground, because at least he should theoretically be an improvement over Servacier Tennis, famous last words, of course. But, the biggest issue for me wasn't even necessarily who he was as a player. Cause if they had made this pick in round three, I think this is a very different conversation.
100%.
And that was the main issue I had was like you said, there's a potential that he's there at round three. And I just didn't have a round two grade on Trotter, like just straight up. The risk reward, it is high because of what we've been talking about, you know, the coverage skills. Some people think they're a little bit overblown, and that may be true, but there's at least a concern there. Like, I think we would be silly to totally dismiss them. But he is a very good run defender. And like you said, very good rushing the passer. So We'll see. You know, he brings a physicality to this defense. I do think that and with the free agent signings and Josiah Trotter and Reuben Bain, of course, too, they have sort of changed their identity defensively. I think they've brought a lot more physical players and guys that are going to be kind of nasty, which is cool. Like, at least even if, you know, they're getting lit up, at least they won't take it lying down, I guess, which
fair
is
enough. Fair enough.
Which, yeah, fair enough, right? Like, I don't know. I still gave it a C. Like, I still wasn't in love with the pick. I'm trying to put a positive spin on it because, you know, I'm trying not to be too Debbie Downer on Josiah Trotter because he didn't make himself be picked by the Bucks, you know, so it's not necessarily his fault. But regardless, yeah, not my favorite pick of this draft. So gave it a C, which is the lowest of these grades, which Zach Blaine, I think this next pick might be your lowest, but this next one was only slightly higher. Like, I didn't love this next pick either, which is Ted Hurst, the round three pick for the Bucks, wide receiver out of Georgia Southern. Right. Georgia Southern, or was it Georgia State?
Georgia State, I think.
Georgia State.
I
get them confused, but, regardless, the Sun Belt Conference
team. You get them confused because they're both irrelevant.
Fair enough. They're both in the Sun Belt Conference. They're both in Georgia. They're both two name schools. They're easily confused. But Ted Hurst, a really big physical wide receiver who's also really fast, was super productive at Georgia State in the Sun Belt Conference. So there's a very big caveat there. Yeah, for me, the need fit was also kind of weird. Like, you know, wide receiver room is not set in stone or anything. Like, I think spending a day three pick on this position would have been A-okay. Spending a round three pick on this position, I'm a little bit more concerned about. The talent for the draft position, he wouldn't have been there beyond round three. Like, I don't think this was too much of a reach. This wasn't a steal either, but I think it was very much like in line with how the mock draft and the consensus board was. The risk reward is pretty high because you're counting on a guy from a smaller school to be able to translate to the next level, which it's not great. I gave it a C. Because there's a very real possibility that he can't make the adjustment, that the competition jump is too big for him. So overall, I gave it a C+, just because, you know, it at least wasn't like a reach or anything. And I can sort of see where he's coming, where Jason Light is coming from here with potentially trying to address the wide receiver room. Cause, you know, if Jalen McMillan or if Chris Godwin gets hurt, then Ted Hurst can potentially be an important player. And if he's as good as Jason Light thinks he is, which I'll give Jason like this. He does know how to draft wide receivers, like Tez Johnson last year, seventh round pick. I think that was a huge steal. Chris Godwin, obviously. Mike Evans. I mean, Jalen McMillan, another example of a pretty solid wide receiver that he drafted. So, you know, when he's spending these higher middle round picks on a wide receiver, they tend to work out, but I still have my reservations. So all that being said, I tried to be a little bit more neutral because I know, Zach Blaine, you're about to pick this pick apart. So go for it. Tear Ted Hurst apart. Rip him a new.
All those things you just said about Jason Light drafting wide receivers. Chris Godwin, where did he go to college?
Right. I get you. They were bigger scores than this. Yeah.
Washington for Jalen McMillan.
Sure.
Mike Evans, Texas A&M. Tez Johnson, seventh round pick, went to Oregon.
Right. I get you.
Ted Hurst went to Georgia State. Is a guy who has had drop problems. The average NFL player, the average wide receiver, we're not even talking good wide receivers. The average is between a 6.2 and a 6.7 drop rate. Ted Hurst averaged a 10.25% average, 127 catches, 13 drops. Not playing legitimate competition. That's what scares me.
Right.
He played one SEC school last season, and that was Ole Miss. They had zero defensive backs drafted in the draft and two UDFAs. That's count, and I'm counting a safety in that conversation. So he may have played coverage on him in a sense. The other big game he had was against Coastal Carolina, who allowed 235.8 passing yards per game last season. Everything else was very average to below average in terms of production. I struggle to see where he's going to be able to – and keep in mind, the Ole Miss game, he had one reception for 6 yards. So I struggle to see how this guy is going to translate into the NFL against NFL caliber defensive backs and linebackers and just the whole thing. The positive of this pick. There are positives. The dude is an athletic freak.
Right. One of the most athletic players.
His vertical is average. His arm length is average. He struggles to bring in the ball, but he's got potential. So I'm not going to give this an F because I do think he's got potential. Okay. I don't think we necessarily reached here because I agree with you 100%. I fully expected him to be gone by round three.
Right.
Or in round three. I wouldn't have taken him in round three, but I understand the allure of having a guy who runs a 4.44 40 and is 4.
Yeah.
But you've got to look at the level of competition.
Sure.
I don't think it fit an immediate need. While I do think we needed an X-type receiver, if you're not going to take them in the first two rounds, I don't think round three on a guy from Georgia State is the right move. Yeah. Had we taken one in the first round, let's say Reuben Bain was gone and Jordan Tyson was there, we took Jordan Tyson. We need an X receiver. He is a difference maker who can make an impact day one.
Right.
Let's say we took Jacoby Lane. We traded up and took Jacoby Lane, who was my favorite receiver in the whole draft class. Again, I think he's produced at a high level at an elite level of competition. I'm there for it. You took a guy from Georgia State who produced big numbers but also had big flaws at a position where we could have taken a bunch of other players that would have maybe made more of an impact day one. I hope I'm wrong. I hope this guy's a stud and he becomes one of the next great wide receivers. I don't expect that. And with that being said, I give this a D to D minus for my overall grade.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tough, man. Those are all totally valid. You know, I'm not necessarily going to disagree with you. I don't know, man. I'm hopeful that the upside here is high enough that it was worth a third round pick. You know what I mean? That's sort of where I'm trying to cling on to for not just totally crapping on it.
That's why it didn't get an F for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because the upside is there. Like if he can produce, we got a steal in the third round.
Right. For sure. And he's got enough athletic, you know, upside and the size and everything to not only just be like a fun little gadget wide receiver, but also like just truly be like a potential like wide receiver 1A or 1B, whatever you want to call him. He could be very good. He could be excellent. I'm with you. I don't necessarily love it. This was my second least favorite pick in this draft, frankly. So I wasn't super jazzed about it, but at the same time, I'm hopeful. Like you said, hoping the best and, you know, this gives the Bucs the flexibility to run some more 4 wide receiver sets or get guys in and out, you know, keep wide receivers fresh, which is really important with Chris Godwin, obviously, out there, as well as guys like Jalen McMillan, who are still coming back from a pretty scary, serious neck injury. And even Emeka Egbuka, you know, he struggled with injuries last year, too. So getting the best out of all of those guys, maybe that means having them play a little bit more in a rotation role, like you talk about the pass rush rotation. Maybe this is an effort to get another wide receiver rotation since they lost Mike Evans. So I don't know. I would have been curious if they would have been able to bring back Mike Evans, how this pick would have gone, if they would have still. Obviously, I think that changes the calculus a little bit for this.
Zero shot Ted Hurts gets picked by this team if Mike Evans is still here.
Yeah, I don't necessarily. I don't disagree.
Zero, but under 20%.
Right. So that's what's tough. You know, that's what's tough. So I don't know. I don't know. We'll see, though. We'll see if he's able to produce. We'll see how he contributes to the team. Because now they have 5 wide receivers that I'm relatively comfortable with, like, getting playing time. I know Ted Hurst is going to have to learn a lot, and he's making a massive jump. But you don't spend a third-round pick on a guy unless you're fairly confident that he could step in and play at least a rotational role. So we'll see if he gets that chance. We'll see what he does with that chance. So it'll be interesting to monitor. But if you're looking to have 5 pieces of some massive depth in your wardrobe, if you're looking to have a wide receiver 5 addition to your wardrobe, if you're looking, man, I need some new threads. Definitely head to shop.rblrsports.com. We'll have you covered, everything Tampa Bay sports related. We hope you'll give that pick an A+. Man, I'm really stretching for draft metaphors here. But regardless, definitely head there. We'll give you a promo code Cannon, CANNONS. Type that bad boy in, get 10% off your entire order. We'd really appreciate it. All right, so we're going to finish out this episode talking about the rest of these picks. We're finishing out on my favorite guys, the day three guys. Well, not really. My favorite day of the draft is actually day two, like round two, round three. That's where teams win. But day three is still super fun too, because I had a list of day three guys, and they actually picked one of them. So we'll get to that. But we'll start with Keyonte Scott, quarterback out of Miami. Really interesting player, really well known for his blitzing ability out of the cornerback spot, specifically out of that nickel or slot, whatever you want to call it. So he's a fascinating pick. I was thinking more about them potentially using this, you know, drafting an outside corner, just because that seems to be more of what they're in need of a backup for. But Keyonte Scott and Reuben Bain were playmakers at Miami last year. They were disgusting to watch. They were really fun. So I gave it the need or the fit. I gave it a B+, just because I totally get that he could come in and make an impact kind of day one. But in terms of, you know, them needing a slot corner, they had Jacob Parrish last year who did a great job. Maybe this means they're thinking about kicking him outside. I don't know. But the talent for the draft position, I was surprised he was still there in round four. I thought at least he was going to be a round three guy, maybe even sneak into the mostly a mid round three guy. So I gave it an A- in terms of the reach / steal. I thought this is a pretty good steal. The risk reward, I gave a B- because there are, you know, he's not the best in coverage, which for a cornerback, you don't want to hear that. But at the same time, he can provide a really high impact in a really fascinating way that fits really well for this Todd Bowles defense. So overall, I gave it an A-. I thought this is a pretty solid pick. Obviously, you can nitpick here and there. Maybe they should have gone here or there. But I thought it was a pretty solid pick here. What were your thoughts on the Keyonte Scott draft pick here, Zach?
Okay, so this one I struggled with, dude. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. This is a situation where I absolutely love the player, but I question the fit / need. Kind of like you said, we needed an outside guy.
Right.
We've now gone, what, three seasons in a row of switching our nickel corner.
Right.
Because we went from Christian Izian
to Tyke Smith.
Smith to Jacob Parrish.
Right.
Are we going to go 4-for-4? Because I'll be honest with you, I don't think Keyonte Scott can play outside. No, I would, as dumb as it sounds, because he's not a big guy, I'd rather him play linebacker than outside corner for us. And I don't want him to play linebacker. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Like, he fits the mold of a nickel / outside linebacker or linebacker than an outside corner.
Yeah.
So in my mind, you're telling me that Keyonte Scott is going to take over the nickel corner, and you're either going to move Jacob Parrish outside, which I don't love that either. I know that he could probably play it, but at 5'10", 5'9", whatever he is, you've got the height disadvantage a lot of times on the outside. And as much as people don't want to say that plays a role, that plays a role. Again, it sucks because I love the player. Like, Keyonte Scott was kind of my steal of the draft outside of Reuben Bain, because I had him as a top 50 to 60 guy.
Mm-hmm.
So for him to be there at, what, would we take him 116 or whatever?
Yeah. Like, pretty crazy value. Yeah.
Insane for me. And him and Reuben Bain have done a ton of work together, which is even better to me because it's like, perfect. They got that relationship already.
Right.
I went with a B- to a C+ in that range, because player wise, great pick. Fit wise and what we needed, I just didn't love that part of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough because I definitely hear you. But you know, when you get into these D3 selections, it can be an interesting conversation. Like, are you really, you know, are you going to pass up on a guy even if he potentially technically plays a position where you already maybe have someone. Because now let's say they decide Benjamin Morrison is the outside corner of the future and they want him playing out there and they want Jacob Parrish to line up in the slot. If Parrish, Morrison, or Zion McCollum get injured, then Keyonte Scott steps into the slot position and maybe kick Parrish outside, and there's not as big of a drop off. You know what I mean? So
that's a huge point. That is a saving grace for this pick for me.
Yeah, because I think the modern movement in the NFL, like obviously on the offensive side of the ball, you saw it with that tight end runs, those tight ends in round two that run a tight end. They're running 12 personnel or 13 personnel, so defenses are responding in kind because they want to come out in nickel formations or whatever. So you have to have a guy at that spot that can be pretty physical, and Keyonte Scott is a thumper. Like he gets in there, he does a lot of dirty work. I know, like you said, he's not the biggest guy, but he does a lot of, you know, he does a lot of things that really well. He
does a lot of linebacker-esque things, which is why I said, like, you know, he's too small to play linebacker, but God forbid we ever need it. Like, I would be comfortable sure. with him killing it. I think he could do a better job than Servasio Dennis at middle linebacker.
Right. And what makes this fun is then Todd Bowles can get a little bit more creative with his formations, which I know, you know, hearing Todd Bowles and
Todd Bowles and creative, that's a crazy concept.
Well, you know, the creative blitzes that he likes to run are fun. So maybe Keyonte Scott adds an element for that. So I really liked this pick. This wasn't my favorite pick of the draft necessarily, but I definitely saw where they were coming from because of just how well he played at Miami, frankly. Like he was really good. Like he was really good at what he did. And what he did isn't necessarily what the Bucks desperately needed right now. But when you're picking in round four and a guy like that is available, excuse me, I see the logic in just saying, hey, this guy's a really good player. Let's just pick him. So I don't know. That's why I gave it an A-. But you know, we'll see how it works out. Now, round five. This is my guy, Damonte Capehart. He was one of my favorite day three guys coming out of this draft. I was ecstatic when the Bucks picked him, but I want to save my jubilation. So, Zach, what were your thoughts when the Bucks picked Damonte Capehart?
At the time, it was kind of like, that's cool. Like, we don't necessarily need interior D line because we did just sign, what was it, Robinson. And
Roach. Yeah,
it didn't feel like a need, but what'd you get for me? I'm so sorry, guys.
That's okay, that's all right.
Ooh, thank Ooh. You.
And this one looks
at you. Wow, that's pretty cool. Hey, I'm gonna do my show real quick, okay? You gotta be quiet.
Okay, that's
okay.
I also brought for you. It is my brought up your own food for you.
She brought my own food. Well, yeah. Thank you. Anyway,
about Damonte Capehart too.
Yeah, I think that the athletic ability of him is insane for how big he is.
Right.
And I think that he could legitimately be D tackle too. No exaggeration. I think a fourth round pick.
Yeah,
fifth round pick. I think he could be a steal there, and he fits what we're gonna. Because let's be honest, Nunez Rocha is a situational guy. Always has been. Sure. A'shaun Robinson.
Not long term solution.
Exactly. Yeah. Vita Vea is getting up there in age. I think this could be a guy we see in Tampa for a long time. So with that being said, I think you might be surprised, but I actually gave this an A-.
Ooh, okay. I love it. Okay, cool. So we're pretty much on the same page because I gave it an A overall. The need fit, I gave an A- just because they lack a little bit, not a lot, but a little, like they could use one more guy. You know, it's the Ocean's 11.
Yeah.
Like we need one more guy. They could use one more defensive lineman. Frankly, you can never really have enough interior defensive linemen because they get hurt. The talent for the draft position, where I struggled a teensy bit with this pick, and even then, this was one of my favorite picks of the draft. So I'm nitpicking here. He might have been there in round six. You know, like this wasn't necessarily like a slam dunk. Oh, you've got to get him in round five. But at the same time, man, his upside is so massive that I kind of get it. So I gave it a B, but even that I could lean towards a B plus. The risk reward for me was an A plus, just because if you're spending a day three pick on a guy with this much upside, despite the fact that the big bugaboo with him is that he only played 12 games in college, you know, like he did not play a whole lot. And so I totally understand folks having some hesitation with Capehart and labeling him like, oh, a slam dunk pick. But that's the reason he's a day three guy. You know, like if he played a bunch and was super productive, then yeah, he probably would have gone a lot earlier. But he was playing with, you know, Peter Woods and T.J. Parker. Like Clemson had this loaded defensive line room. So I don't even necessarily put that on him. So yeah, I was really stoked when they made this pick, just because it, like you said, his combine numbers off the charts, a guy that size moving that well is just insanity. It's kind of unheard of in some aspects, but so Damonte Capehart, man, I'm really stoked for this pick. Obviously you kind of want to bring him along a little bit more slowly because of his lack of playing experience. But at the same time, like you put him through training camp, you get him in workouts and all that stuff. Like he could be a really interesting player moving forward. So Damonte Capehart, he's really fun. That brings us to Billy Schroth, an interior offensive lineman out of Notre Dame. The flexibility, he can play left or right guard. So I got this pick, like, especially, you know, I know it's a round five pick on an offensive lineman. How can you get too jazzed about it? But they needed some depth there. They seriously needed some depth on the interior offensive line. So I gave it an A minus for the need fit. And the talent for draft position, it seemed pretty solid, like not necessarily a steal, but also not necessarily a super big reach either. So I gave it a B plus. Then the risk reward, this is where it gets a little tricky, because he does have a massive injury history. He had an MCL tear in 2025. I think he had an ankle issue the year before. But the good news is great, great pass blocker. And like I said, that positional versatility for a day three offensive lineman is huge, especially on the interior, because, you know, you're not necessarily drafting a guy to play one position in round five. You're drafting a guy that can hopefully fill in a few different roles. So overall, I gave this an A minus. I mean, when you're picking an offensive lineman in day three that can play multiple positions and he's out of Notre Dame, even just that alone, that's probably a pretty good sign. But what were your thoughts on the Billy Schroth pick, Mr.
Blake? I was there with you 90% of the time you were talking.
Okay, 90% of the time.
Multiple positions, good stuff. Played at Notre Dame, good stuff. Decent sized school, not mad at it. But then you look at his athletic ability and his quickness, and it is god awful.
Yeah, not great.
He's going to struggle so bad against athletic interior guys and speedy edge rushers. Obviously, edge rushers aren't going to be dealing with guards too often, but if they slide in and it's one-on-one, he's going to struggle. Granted, this is a depth piece. You're not drafting him to start day one. You're not drafting him to start at all. But if he does have to start, we're in trouble. Yeah. So I gave it an A, or not an A, Jesus, good Lord. I gave it a C, pushing towards C plus, just because everything you had said with the injury history and then adding on the athletic ability, like, I don't know. I feel like I would have rather gone center here than him.
Yeah, it's tough, because I definitely don't dismiss the slight downgrade in athletic ability. Like he wasn't lighting up the combine or anything like that by any stretch of the imagination. But I try to look at day three picks with clear eyes. Like if you're, you know, yeah, if this guy steps in to start, then yeah, there's going to be a downgrade, because he's a fifth round pick, you know, and he's a rookie. So it's tough, because you could, yeah, you're you're in trouble probably regardless of because they didn't invest in a higher pick in this position. So yeah, they're not going to have great performance out of a round five guy. So, but at the same time, like I thought the value wasn't bad. So that was sort of what was inflating the pick a little bit for me, but I definitely feel you. Like there's definitely a very real possibility where Billy Schroth is, you know, cut next year, you know, he just doesn't work out. But for a round five pick, you know, that's not necessarily unheard of. That's how it be sometimes. So yeah, I tried not to be too harsh, but I definitely feel you. Like he's definitely not the guy that you want coming in to play left or right guard. You know, if someone goes down, but you know, you have to have somebody. So Billy Schroth, we'll see how he does. We'll see if his services are needed, or if the Bucks have a little bit more injury luck with that interior offensive line, because man, it was gnarly last year. But that brings us to their final pick of the draft, which was kind of an interesting one. Bauer Sharp, tight end out of LSU. Mr. Blaine, I see you shaking your head. What were your thoughts on them spending a draft pick on Bauer Sharp?
You didn't spend a draft pick. You spent two draft picks on him. I hate it. I can't stand this pick. I think it's the worst pick of the entire draft. Well, of our entire draft. Of our entire draft. I got to reframe that. What does he do?
If you're asking me, I can sort of answer. He does have athletic upside.
He's an athletic freak for a former quarterback turned tight end.
Right. And that's another thing. He's another in the line of pass catchers who used to be quarterbacks, so they kind of see the field well. But go ahead.
I don't know. He is a guy. Hold on, Hazel. He's a guy that I would have never traded up for. He was projected to go undrafted.
Right. Yeah. That's the tough part.
And you traded your sixth and seventh round pick when, let's be honest, Tampa needs bodies. You traded your sixth and seventh round pick to draft a guy who was projected to be undrafted, which I'll be honest, to me, he fits the Devin Culp-esque pick. Culp was super athletic, didn't have a good amount of production in college. Bauer Sharp did not produce very much in college.
Right. He wasn't even the starting tight end technically.
Exactly. So he had some big plays that were kind of flashy, and I'll give you that, but he did not produce at a high level. Granted, he was a sixth round pick. Are we really stressing a sixth round pick? No. Right. But we could have gone a multitude of different spots there with two picks as opposed to having one and taking a guy who was projected to be undrafted.
Yeah. And it's also at a position where they theoretically have four or five guys that can fill in.
Yeah, while we might not have a big name in that position, we have depth at that position.
Right, yeah.
So I just hated it kind of all the way around, if I'm being honest with you. I gave this an F. I don't care. I understand maybe he's got some special teams ability, but the fact that – and a big part of it is the fact that you traded away another pick to reach on a guy that would have probably been there at the end of the draft.
Yeah, it's tough because it's hard to be too harsh on day three guys, especially. But you do have to grade the process, and you have to think about, well, what else could they have done here? And I definitely feel like spending that was my biggest bug. The two biggest issues that I had with this selection was the need and the fit, which I gave a C+ just because I agree. Payne Durham, Kate Otten, Devin Culp, and Coke Heeft. Those are four tight ends, and they're not the best. They're not, they're not George Kittle, but collectively that's a fine tight end room.
Because Bauer Sharp is nothing different than what we've got. Kind of where had we taken Kenyon Sadiq, let's just say hypothetically Ruben Bang got drafted and we took Kenyon Sadiq, I'd be like, we just improved our tight end room.
Right, exactly.
You bring Bauer Sharp and you're like, we've kind of got everything he does just in maybe two guys.
Right. Yeah, it's hard because I would have really loved for them to select a safety here. There's a lot of talent there. Not a lot of talent, but there were some interesting guys there still available. There's potential there. What's that?
There's potential there.
Yes, there's potential there. And the Bucs, frankly, have a little bit more of a need in the safety room right now because, man, it's real thin after their two starters.
Is it J.J. Russell's, safety three?
Right, exactly. So there were some other areas that they could have explored here. Given it's a round six pick and spending a round six and seven pick on one guy, it's a little funky when it's a six round pick. I don't know. So I gave it overall a C+ just because I do think that there's a potential reward here. I do think Bauer Sharp athletically has enough. He's sort of the Ted Hurst of this draft for the tight end room for the Bucs. He does have enough athletic upside, and he's not necessarily totally lost as a blocker, which is nice as well. But like you said, he probably goes undrafted. Even if it was a pretty massive reach for me, so I gave that a C in terms of talent for draft position. So I totally get that. Overall, I gave it a C+ for the draft grade. I wasn't super enthused by it. But at the same time, he's an LSU guy, so go Tigers and all that. But yeah, I don't know. The fact that the biggest issue for me with him was that he was tight end two at LSU. And given I love Tre'Davious Green, like Tre'Davious Green might be like a first or second round pick next year because he's that talented of a tight end. So that's not necessarily like, that's not me hating on Tre'Davious Green. I'm not saying that Bower Sharpe was a terrible player for getting beat out by Tre'Davious Green. It's more of just that, you know, when he's not even starting, then I don't know, at a position like tight end, no less. Like, it's not like LSU was the super loaded roster with tons of talent. They were running 12 personnel all the time. Like, they were very much like LSU, WRU, like their wide receiver U. Like, I don't know. It was confusing, but at the same time, it's a round six pick. So, you know, what are you going to do? That's the last pick of the draft. So in case y'all are keeping track, we're now going to get to the overall draft grade. So I don't know. For me, the Reuben Bain pick, it carries quite a bit of weight here. Because when you hit on your first round pick, like when you hit a home run there, it kind of inflates the rest of the draft. Even if I don't love what they did for the rest of their draft, I also really like the Keontae Scott pick. I really liked the DeMonte Capehart pick. So overall, I gave it a B+. I know the round 2-3 picks weren't necessarily our favorites, but I think that they did enough here to have it be a pretty serviceable draft. But Mr. Blaine, I know you might disagree. So what was your overall draft grade for this?
You're spot on. Reuben Bain helps this a lot. I'm stuck between a C+ to a B-.
Okay, that's not that bad. That's not that bad.
Like, the Reuben Bain pick is helping a ton. Right. I'm going to be honest with you. Yeah. Had you not taken Reuben Bain and taken, let's say, the big mock was Akeem Mesidor to Tampa at 15,
sure.
This would have probably been a D.
Wow, really? See, but I would have thought that because if they picked a corner, then you would have been you would have been stoked.
A corner? No. What corner? Keontae Scott?
Who am I thinking of? The LSU corner.
You're thinking on Thor.
Oh, okay.
Mesidor was the other Miami D-end.
Man, I'm stupid. Yeah, Akeem Mesidor would have been a disaster. Yes, I agree. I'm sorry.
It would have gone
Lane as well. And it's – anyways, yes.
No, had we taken Delane, yes, you're spot on. This it would have probably been higher than what it is now.
Wow, okay, cool.
Well, just because I like corners, sure. The talent level I think is the same in Bain and Mansoor. But no, I honestly, I'm going to go with a C+, B- for the whole draft.
Fair enough. Yeah, I'm B+ is really like I think I'm a little higher on the Scott pick, and I do love the Capehart pick, and I'm a little less. Like the Bower Sharpe pick, like I didn't love it, but it's also a round six pick, so I'm kind of like, ah.
Agreed.
Because I think the margin between a round six and a round seven pick and an undrafted free agent is a little bit thinner than I think people give it credit for. But at the same time, like it's not nothing. You know, there is a margin there. Like, you know, you could.
And again, had we just taken him 10 picks later and not traded our seventh,
right.
I don't think. And, like, what is a seventh-round pick going to do? I mean, we just saw Tez Johnson come in and catch, what, 7 touchdowns for us this season?
Yeah, it's not nothing. It's not irrelevant.
And so it's, like, the potential to have – I almost would put money that he would have been there 10 picks later, if not into the seventh round slash undrafted.
Yeah, and it's tough because, like, you saw the tight end run in round two, so maybe that's their thought process. But at the same time, I don't know that you can use – the round two tight end run to justify doing that. So
exactly. There's a clear talent level between our talent differential between the round two tight ends and the round six tight end.
Right. So, I guess I was trying to think along with him, like maybe his parent, like the paranoia sets in, like you're trying like the game theory of the draft, like, oh, well maybe the, you know, it's weird.
And that's fair. But if that's the case, why not trade up? What, how many spots did he go before? Did Rodriguez go before Trotter? Why not trade up there if you're paranoid that a linebacker is going to go?
Yeah.
You can't tell me you are really that high. If Jacob Rodriguez fell to you in the second round, you would have scooped him up quicker than the Reuben Bain pick.
Right.
So it's like I struggle to throw the paranoia into it.
Sure.
Which you're probably – that's probably what happened. They're like, oh, in the next 10 picks, the next 3 tight ends could go. I don't disagree with you that that's what happened, but that doesn't make it any better in my book.
No, I don't blame you. Yeah, it's tough, but regardless, the Bucks had an interesting draft, at least that warranted a lot of discussion. And next week we'll be talking about the rest of the division because they also had some fun drafts. I got to be honest, the rest of the division did pretty well. I mean, the Falcons, there's only so much you can do when you don't have your first round pick. But the Panthers and the Saints, I was pretty excited about their draft. So we'll have a lot to talk about there. But regardless, hope y'all are tuned in next week. Hit that like and subscribe button on the way out. Thank you to my wonderful co-host, Mr. Zach Blaine, as well as our super producer, Eureka Wheeler. We will be back next week, like I said, talking about the rest of the division. But until then, and as always, go Bucks.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.